Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys, I...
Do you want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore.
It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. On this episode, we have a ton to talk about, including the review of Steven Spielberg's movie The Fabelmans, a favorite to win Best Picture at the Oscars. A bunch of DC news. Shit's going down in DC. They're shaking things up. An interview with Stephen Lang, the villain from Avatar, and back as the villain in Avatar The Way of Water. And we'll be talking about the most underappreciated movies of 2022 as the year comes to a close. Omega Accounting Solutions, folks, if you're a small business owner, pay attention. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Omega Accounting Solutions can help you recover payroll tax overpayments and determine if you're eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee. All it takes is a quick, easy, and free 10-minute consultation. Determine if you qualify. Omega is a small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit now. The 3-year sunset deadline for filing begins to close on March 31st, 2023. So learn if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. I can read numbers when they're numbers, but when they're spelled out, it's just tough. 800-309-ERC. There we go. Dyslexic. 800-309-ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredits.com/BarstoolSports. You can do that as well. Thank you to Omega for sponsoring the podcast as our presenting sponsor. All right. Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool episode. What are we looking at now? 65 of season 2. Two episodes starting this week.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Looping it on in.
What is it? Tuesday, Friday drop? Is that what you landed on?
Yeah.
Friday morning? Yes. Early Friday morning drop. So you can get used to that now. Two episodes. Just to break things up, we like where we were with what we have, but episodes are getting too long on Mondays. Some people like long podcast episodes, but the proof is in the pudding. It's not really a smart thing to do. We're not having like 3 hour-and-a-half bangers. That's just not smart.
We're not Coley and Show Weathers.
Unfortunately, this is still a business. We got to make money, and 3 hour-and-a-half long podcast just isn't going to work. So there'll be about 2 hour-and-a-half long podcasts with reviews mostly on Mondays. We have an interview today with Stephen Lang. We have an interview with Kumail Nanjiani on Thursday. On Friday. We will have that. Before we get into, I guess, movie news, White Lotus. Actually, first, I do want to note, Chris not on the podcast. I don't want to speak for what Chris is going through. We wish Chris the best. You can go to Chris's Twitter and see kind of what he's dealing with. He wrote a whole blog about it, but we are sending our best to Chris
and excited to have him back on the pod whenever that may be in the future. Just wanted to note that off the top. White Lotus, though, HBO, I caught up just in time. I did finish all of White Lotus. What did we think? I'd rather you guys go first. I like it. I'll just say I like it. I don't think it's as good as season one. I know some people thought it was, but I don't think it's even relevant because I think it's just good. It was just a very enjoyable season of television, albeit very short season.
Extremely horny season of television.
Yes.
Not the horniest season of television I've ever watched.
Will you be able to watch Sopranos ever again the same way?
Because of Chris?
Oh, because of Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was horny in that too, to be fair. He was very horny in Sopranos.
That is true.
I think the season was really good in different ways from the first season. I will say I don't feel like this finale landed nearly as hard or well done as the first one finale did. Yeah. There's all those storylines, right? And like, not to be too spoiler or anything. I really like how they wrapped up Tanya. It feels like every other plot line was unfinished. Like, it feels like it was very not thought out well enough in this last final for this last episode. Like, and they need one more episode to really finish everything up or something like that. But again, like, I do really like the way they wrapped up Tanya, who was the one character who had carried over from the previous season. I just wish that like there was less ambiguity, because it didn't feel like ambiguity for the purpose of the show. It felt like ambiguity because they didn't know what to do. And I don't like that. I feel like it felt like a little bit like a cop out, and I didn't appreciate it.
Yeah. I don't know. I really did not like Tanya's storyline like throughout the season. I think that was the weak point. Like every time they went to her, I was just kind of like, I don't know. I didn't know how I felt about her really the whole way through. It almost felt like they knew she was a fan favorite, so they just brought her back for the hell of it. And she really hammed it up. I like Jennifer Coolidge, but she was really hamming it up this year. I liked most of it. I actually really liked the way they finished off things, leaving some stuff just kind of unsaid.
It's like all things unsaid.
Yeah,
I wish everything unsaid.
I almost wish someone else had died.
That would be my one complaint. I do wish.
I wish Albie was dead.
Yeah, Albie sucks, man. He does suck. Fucking bozo.
He does. Yeah, Albie stinks.
God, there's just something.
I don't know. Like, I feel like any character that has the line exchange with like a hooker or call girl, I didn't know. Like, that character always stinks 10 out of 10 times. I don't know why. That's a theory I have. I need to do more research.
Girls know the nice guys are the worst ones, and he was the ultimate nice guy. Like,
mm-hmm.
He was horny respectfully. Like,
yeah, sort of.
He was the only time he wasn't nice was grandpa's farting in bed,
which was funny.
Yeah, he that should like yeah. At heart, I don't think he's a very good guy. I think he should have let his grandfather just keep breaking wind in bed.
His line of "our Achilles' heels are Achilles' cock."
Yes. F. Murray Abraham crushed this season too, by the way. He was probably like, out of all the actors' performances in this, I think F. Murray Abraham was, he crushed. He was so funny.
That patch on his head just kept getting bigger.
Yeah. Over and over again.
I do appreciate
it. Fucking ripped him off for 50 grand, more than 50 grand off his family to pay for a fucking hooker. And like, he knew he was a mark. His dad knew he was a mark. Like, everyone knew he was a mark but him.
If I had 50 grand, she could have every last penny.
Yes, that actress definitely could. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that was. As a long time Haley Lou Richardson stan, I thought she was great. Mm-hmm.
The guy who played Jack in that was also very creepy. I think he was like the perfect blend of he had a really good blend of like, you believe he's like a regular human until you don't. And like, I feel like he did a good job. Even if it wasn't on purpose, he creeped me out that whole fucking series. Especially the part where he butt fucked his uncle, but you know.
When she looks at him in the car and she just goes, "You fuck your uncle?"
Yeah.
Very funny.
Well, even funnier than that was Jennifer Coolidge's line delivery when she's just like, she's like, "Yeah, I caught him. He was fucking his uncle." Like, it just like the most defeated sigh. It was so funny.
That was a great twist in the season. It was very unexpected. That actor, too, by the way.
The position Tom Hollander was in, that little tiny man just like all curled up getting railed by that man. It was so funny.
Yo, I do. I love
Tom. I never realized how short Tom Hollander was until I watched his show. He is like 4 foot tall. It is incredible.
What was he in that we recently talked about? We talked Jurassic about World. Him with.
Jurassic World, the second one that was shitty. I'm pretty sure he was in that. And we talked about him a lot, if I remember right.
Yeah, because he wasn't in anything else this year.
Not this year. I don't think we talked about anything.
He came up recently. Anyway, he was the prime minister in Rogue Nation, Mission Impossible. And then he was a very good role in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. He's in many other things as well. Gosford Park. I mean, he's Pride and Prejudice. Like, he's in a bunch of shit. But like in terms of like recent stuff, maybe it might have been Pirates. I was just bringing him up, but he's Lord Cutler Beckett in the Pirates franchise. And I always thought he's a very good British voice.
Would you guys give like a season MVP to? Because I think like season one, it was pretty clear it was Murray Bartlett. I can't remember his character's name, but the Australian hotel manager. This season, not as clear, I don't think. Also, no. Kendrick, you're getting a massive echo. We might have to stop for a second and get your echo cancellation on. But yeah, season MVP, like who would you guys go with? Because I think this season there's some.
I would say I think because we just don't see him in. I mean, he's consistently been in stuff in very small roles, but I think Michael Imperioli was my favorite. I don't know, like if you're a Sopranos, like he was such a prominent role for so many episodes that I really enjoy him. He had such like a he had a perfect. Like kind of skittish reaction to everything. He was always like, even like I think about the one scene where he went back to Lucy and he was like, he's like, maybe don't see my son anymore. And he kept like turning around and looking at her. Like he just had this very like paranoid feel to him that I really enjoyed him. He was my favorite person in the season.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who I would pick. I feel like it's a tougher question. I think if I had to pick one, it would be F. Murray Abraham. I think like every scene brought up both comedy and drama like he was good at, and he was just great to play off of for all the characters, really, like even down to like when he talked to not Lucia, what was her name, Valentina, no, that was the manager, whoever the other Italian girl was.
A hotel manager stinks, by the way.
Yeah, she stunk.
She was a creep.
Yeah,
she was a pervert. She's a perv. Yeah,
and it's weird too because like if you substituted that character with a man, like it would be so much more evident. Like he would be like people would be like, "Oh, this fucking creep show, dude!" Like, but yeah, no, she was. I think
Mia would be the other one.
Really good.
Not Bella.
Yeah,
I'm going Daphne, dude. Daphne just unbothered. Like, she just did not give a fuck.
Yeah, she didn't give a shit about anything. Yeah.
Oh, did they fuck on that island or whatever? Like, what was the deal?
I think that was left for us to interpret.
I interpret as they did.
Yes,
but why were they all best friends? Like, right after they're best friends, like minutes after he punched Cameron in the face. Like, I don't get that. Like, everything was made up,
shit, bro. That's just how dudes work.
He tried to fuck his wife. That's not dude shit. That's the opposite of dude shit,
bro. You hit your
buddy. The number one rule.
You're good.
I will say. Theo James, which somebody brought it was our friend Kirk Minahan. He brought this up when I was at a lunch in Boston before the dozen. He said, like, what do you think about Theo James for a Bond? He's like, that's a British name. I like it. Theo James with an American accent to me is just very it works for me, but it's weird to me.
It sounds so fucking weird. He's too tense.
It almost sounds like it's somebody else voicing him.
Bond needs to be a pasty motherfucker. Like that's an English role. You need to be a pasty. If you're gonna pick a white dude, it's gotta be a pasty motherfucker. You know what I mean?
He's almost, and I know he's British, but he's got a very all-American look to him.
He just has a very not British look to him.
Yeah, he's almost too handsome.
Yeah, to be from that disgusting island.
I mean, seriously, like he is jaw-droppingly handsome. Like very good-looking dude. He's also massive.
He's huge. Like, the dude who played Ethan, I didn't realize. Like, I thought he was a tiny little nerd until he took his shirt off that first scene. I was like, "Oh, damn, this guy's shredded too." Shit.
Yeah, he was when he came back from running to beat off in his hotel room. Yeah.
Who among us hasn't though?
I can't imagine wanting to jerk off after a run. I think that's the opposite of any, like, the last thing on my pecking order of things I want to do is beat off after any sort of exercise.
Something about a hotel room.
I did.
Sitting in brony piss in Orlando, wherever that was.
There was a funny tweet about how cities and hotels should have to bid like the Olympics for the next seasons of the White Lotus. I did like that. That's very charming. I'm very curious, like, where they would.
They're going what, to. What they're, gonna do next. They're doing Tokyo next. That'll be interesting.
I like that.
Yeah, that'd be weird too, because that's not like both of the first two are like. You know, seaside paradises, and like that won't be Tokyo. It's gonna be more dark and, I guess, gritty is not the right word, but it's gonna be very different, I think.
I like that it's like the Winter and Summer Olympics, but it's like it's Knives Out and the White Lotus just bidding for it's bidding to be featured in these. Yeah, I thought it was good though. It was like the banger theme song. It's good Sunday night HBO. It's just what you come to expect from HBO. That you're like, but also it's like, it's over. I don't watch the next time ons anymore. And I just didn't realize it was the finale until like going into, I saw the tweets about it. I was like, oh fuck. It's like seven. That's not enough.
It honestly probably could have used an extra episode. If we're being honest, that was probably a little bit too much to wrap up in one. Yeah. It was a longer episode, but that was a lot of storylines to wrap up.
And it didn't feel like, again, that they wrapped them all up. It just felt like,
no.
It felt like the one got wrapped up and the rest of them, they were just like, oh, who knows? Who knows? Like, I feel like if they used a little more finality or a little more something, because they were just like, you can do that with one storyline, right? You can't do that with multiple. Like, there's so much shit going on. Like, we still don't know, were they trying to kill Tanya? Like, that, I don't think that was explicitly revealed, yes or no. Like, we still have no clue. And in addition to that, we don't know why any of the Cameron Ethan shit got resolved. We don't know a lot of stuff. I feel like they should have at one storyline can end ambiguously. The rest need to be, I think, definitely solved or explicitly said out loud.
Albie's going to be shot dead to open up season three.
I would love that.
By the way, this would make, I think if they have the season three, Greg will be the only person that will carry through all three seasons. The husband of Tanya. He'll be the only person that'll be in all three, presuming he'll be there.
I could see Haley making her come back too, because she's like.
But then she'd be in two, so like Greg would be all three.
Yeah.
If
but she does feel like the carryover character.
Yeah, and Greg will have all of Tanya's money now, so very intrigued to see what that's all.
That is true. I like that. I would like that storyline. That would be good.
So maybe that's how they wrap. Maybe that's the plan with this one. Is like those ended ambiguously, so that they could explain it more, I guess, in the next season. But still, I wanted a little. Then make the other storyline wrap up.
I just remember him bare cheeks falling out of the front of the bed.
Yeah.
When she shoved him off, and like one of the first, it was probably like the first episode.
Bare ass.
Greg's in Tokyo.
I wish that piano player actually died. That dude was so fucking
funny. Yeah, he should have croaked too.
Yeah. He should have been dead. Would love that.
I like a good dark show like that, because really, like, not funny things become funner, because him failing to sing that song and standing up at the piano only to just collapse because of, like, his fake Viagra was very funny.
Killed me. So good.
Ugh, fuck. All right, that's White Lotus. What's the next, like, show on the horizon?
Last of Us.
Mandalorian 2 is coming soon. No, that's next year.
March.
Yeah.
Huh. The Last of Us, baby, January.
Yeah, okay. But I feel like we're missing something.
I'm excited for that.
Is there another miniseries coming out soon? Am I missing? I feel like we're missing something. Huh. I don't know.
I'm excited for Last of Us, though. As someone who didn't play the game, I'm also excited in that sense, too, to kind of give my thoughts. I'm looking forward to that.
Vinyl Season 3.
Who?
That's the one I forgot.
Vinyl Season 3 of Vinyl.
that's the one I forgot, yeah.
Is that a thing?
No.
I was like, did I miss something? Like, holy shit.
This Is Us season premiere January 4th. The Amazing Race. I didn't know that was still going.
I had a friend in college who had a cameo in Vinyl. He lives in South America and sells fruit now.
I thought you were going to say at first that he had a cameo in Amazing Race. I'm like, that just means he was in it. Like, he's just himself.
He's just in the background. He's in the background, yeah.
Yeah.
Manscaped. Nothing crazy. Tis the season for not just stocking stuffer, but cleaning your balls, folks, Manscaped. They're helping you diversify the holiday season with various different gifts, white elephants, maybe Secret Santa. Manscaped's a great thing to have for this time of year, especially, like I said, the stocking stuffers. Manscaped.com, use code LIFE for 20% off and free shipping with all the things we're about to talk about. It's the one-stop shop for holiday needs. They got the Platinum Package 4.0. Comes with the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker for shaving down below, the NickSafe technology. I don't worry about ripping your sack up, all that stuff. 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, body wash, deodorant, the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver, the ball spray, ball deodorant, travel bag, the non-chafe boxers. They have the Shears 2.0. Comes with all these little nail clippers and tweezers, kind of like the Swiss Army knife for, you know, making your fingers and shit not look gross. They have their cologne, the preserved cologne. It's got a woodsy scent to it. Obviously, the nose and ear hair trimmer. Don't pick your nose hairs. You could die. Don't do that. Yeah, we've been talking about Manscaped for, it seems like, years. Mm-hmm. And this is the best time of year to get it. Toss it in as a stocking stuffer, something for people to have, quick little gift to open up. And then they can also come back for more because Manscaped has a good refill program. 20% off free shipping, code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off of free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code LIGHTS. Manscaped, great holiday gift.
No disrespect to John Anik, but our Manscaped reads are so much better than his were during the UFC event. they get like two lines about? Worth. It's just they John Anik in the UFC. Just like, yeah, Manscaped. Make sure you buy Manscaped. You got a brand new lawnmower package 3.0. All right, back to the fight. And then we give the whole spiel. John Anik could never.
Or Jordan, I would love to trade sponsors though and get P3, the little protein packs that are always sponsored.
Yeah, yeah. Those rock.
Those little Oscar Mayer, yeah, P3. Is that what is it Oscar Mayer?
Yeah. I think
yeah, so. It's like P3. Fucking ham, like Swiss cheese and almonds and like an ounce of each. And I'm just like,
always
hell yeah,
this shiniest rocks. Ham too. That ham glistens.
So like glossy.
It's like food for a Neanderthal. Like it's like
yeah. Oh, by the way, one of the shows we forgot, and I didn't realize this was coming out so soon, but January 13th, Peacemaker, the next season. That's huge.
Really?
What? Yeah, I didn't realize it. Peacemaker is coming out. It's January 13th, new season.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm looking at an Entertainment Weekly published this December 6th, January 13th. Huh. They didn't advertise it, I feel like, at all. They should be.
That's weird.
We haven't even seen, like, a on-set picture, like, wait, what?
Yeah. I'm just telling you, that's what it says. That's what Entertainment Weekly said. I mean, if they're wrong, then blame them. That's not me. There has to, season two, let's see on their wiki.
No.
The second season. Wait, no. Because then on here, it says the second season's filming in 2023.
Yeah, that's
camp. On their wiki, it says not until next year. But why the fuck does it say it?
That's why nobody fucking reads Entertainment Weekly.
Exactly. Wow. Fucking bomb.
AOL blast. Jesus. Anymore. That's a good segue into our DC talk. A lot of these are rumors, by the way. I want to preface it with that. But when there's enough of these, well, it's like, all right, there's smoke. Yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire. Here's the rundown of what's likely going to happen with DC or is in the hopper. First of all, I will say, James Gunn, Safran, they're going to be presenting a 10-year plan to DC apparently this week, so keep that in mind. Wonder Woman 3 apparently no longer moving forward. Considered dead in its current incarnation.
Good.
Patty Jenkins submitted a treatment and was told the project did not fit in with any of the DC plans. That makes sense.
Kal-El, no.
it's probably time to... I know, Ken Jack, you I feel like you were first on this. It probably... Recasting Diana Prince might make sense.
Again, I feel like people, like, there's this weird penchant where people pretend like she's a Gal Gadot's like a good actress. She's not. And like Wonder Woman, she was good in that role because she didn't really have to do anything other than be there. And it required like less to know, like basically no acting skill whatsoever. I feel like if you cast someone that still has like the look, because undeniably Gal Gadot has the Wonder Woman look. But like if you cast someone else that has the look but has more of an ability, I feel like people would resonate with that way more. And plus, like, it's not like Gal Gadot is going to be like fucking strapped for work. Like, she's going to do Red Notice 15 and like some other like 8 Underground Netflix movie that's worth takes $500 billion to make and pays her $100 million salary, so she'll be fine.
Yeah, the 84 was so bad that
I said it on the long take. I mean, it fucking stunk, and it didn't even have to be good. Ferocious. It could have been average, and people would have loved it because we didn't have any movies when it came out. Like that movie stunk out loud.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
It's a cool premise. Like, put Wonder Woman in the 80s, like a superhero 80s flick with Wonder Woman, like all the music, the sound, the score was pretty good. I mean, that was a Zimmer score, I think, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, she keeps like banging the fake guy, the fake Chris Pine. The whole thing is just weird.
Kind of problematic.
It's a weird movie.
They made Pedro Pascal bad. That's how bad that movie was. Like, somehow had a performance from Pedro Pascal that was bad.
Kristen, big movie for the furries.
That was the Kristen Wiig thing was that was weird. Just the whole thing was just
two back to in both movies. Very bad villains, terrible villains. You know what I mean? And that goes more on Patty Jenkins than anything.
Yeah, Patty Jenkins has to be an idiot for thinking she could co-write this with Geoff Johns and submit it to James Gunn. And
yeah,
that would just fly. Yeah. Like that wasn't ever. Gonna
you don't
work.
Like this? What's wrong? You're not a fan? So that's the big one. Though I'd say this is big too. Apparently they're gonna reboot Aquaman after the sequel that's coming out soon.
That's weird.
And recast.
That's the weirder thing to me because I feel like Momoa is more cemented in the role of Aquaman than Gal Gadot was in Wonder Woman. If that makes sense.
You're gonna have to play Lobo.
Yeah, exactly. It's fucking
hell
weird.
Yeah. Dude, Lobo is the perfect gun character is the thing. Like, that is a James Gunn character. Like, he's an outcast, like, bit of a misfit WWE wrestler. I mean, Jason Momoa can step right into it.
Mm-hmm.
It is the perfect role for him and the perfect movie for James Gunn. But like you said, he's very entrenched in Aquaman. That's one of their better castings they've ever done. Like, it was a risk, and it paid off tremendously. That first Aquaman made $1 billion.
And that's one of those things, too, where, like, Momoa isn't, like, a top-flight actor or anything like that, but he has, like, charisma, and I feel like if he fits the role of Aquaman better, because that's just what that character has, at least in their iteration of it.
My man.
And that fucking rocked. Like, that should not work, but he made it work. The guy who played a young Aquaman in the Aquaman movie was so bad. Do you ever see like the clips like rewatching that? It's rough.
So apparently that could happen. Man of Steel 2 apparently no longer moving forward. Apparently he shot a cameo for the Flash, which had been scrapped. Flash is apparently being delayed. I think the Flash is probably being used as like a timeline reset, maybe.
Yes.
And then they're still tinkering around with it. Gunn says Superman's still a priority, if not the top priority moving forward. Just let Henry Cavill go already. Let him go do something else. Let him go be the male Captain Britain. Like, stop hanging him up. Like, let him go do something else.
He deserves a good movie.
HBO's calling his name.
Yeah.
He needs to be in House of the Dragon.
He's going to be.
I don't care who.
I'm very confident.
He needs to play a dragon.
The literal dragon, yeah.
Mocap.
Yeah, that's sad. This is probably the saddest one, but like, let's be honest, this needs to happen. Like, Gunn really does just need all these stories. It's like some of these I'm like really upset about. Some of these I couldn't give a fuck less about, like Wonder Woman. But like, Gunn has no choice. He's been put in a situation where he really does just have to. You got to reboot the whole thing. It's the Matthew McConaughey. Sometimes you got to go back before you can go forward. And
It's weird too because I feel like as fans of like just superhero movies in general, especially good ones, like it for us, it sucks because we're watching like a dying star with DC. It's like everything we watch, we're like, we know this isn't going to continue in its current form. So like it's awkward almost to watch these movies knowing that they're not going to be really like they're so like sort of like in the starting phase, but like they're not really going to take off anywhere with this current everything currently is. So like for them to just do a nice cold restart and just dump everything up from there, I think would be super smart for them.
Black Adam apparently not getting a sequel. Apparently Gunn and Safran weren't happy with how The Rock and his people handled the Henry Cavill situation. Not surprised. That whole thing. I mean, honestly, look, we don't hate The Rock. I like The Rock.
I do. No, I'm out.
You hate The Rock.
I made this announcement on the Log Tick. I'm just out on him. It's become too much.
I, the way they handled like, oh, we're taking over DC, you just sensed, you're like, that doesn't sound right. That sounds like bullshit. Like that can't be that. Like, it was like, I could see being look, DC and Warner Brothers, they've done a pretty shitty job with this, and that's why they've had these guys come in and attempt to fix things. But even them, I could see them being like, what the fuck is he talking about? Like, it was kind of crazy.
I don't think you know what you're talking about, Jeff, because this Black Adam movie actually made more money than Captain America: The First Avenger. So maybe like check yourself before you wreck yourself.
It's crazy to me that it was crazy. It was the more you think, like when you sit back and you think about what he did with the promotion of this movie, and the more like stuff comes out, the more you realize like he had no authority to say what he said. That's crazy. It's a great example of why the DC needs fixing. It's like you just had this guy, he was just like, yeah, we changed everything now. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
Mm-hmm. Apparently he's the one who forced the Cavill cameo into the movie, like him and his production company. What is it, like $7 production? Like
$7 production?
They went behind like DC's back to force us into the movie.
Like, That's crazy.
So he wrote these checks that DC's like, well, we don't know if we're going to do this. Like, we'd like to bring Cavill back, but we don't really have a plan in place. You just kind of set up a fucking movie for us. Like, what the fuck, man?
He's going to like, once all this shit gets canned, he's going to come out and just be like, guys, I really fought. I know you all wanted to see Black Adam 2. I know you wanted to see it. We're going to be like, nope. None of us really wanted this that bad at all. Like, we're good.
Wait, did you see, you might have seen it, Hideo Kojima's Black Adam review?
No, I didn't. I saw him tweet a shit ton of rant. I love Hideo Kojima because he just posts pictures, like his entire Twitter feed is just him with celebrities. It's like here's me with like Christopher Imperioli. It's like, good friend. And like, I love his Twitter feed. Sorry, what was the review though?
Sometimes he'll like actually like have like, most of the time he'll have like input on the movie and he'll say like, yeah, like I liked it. Very fun, good. But with Black Adam, he was like, the exact wording was, I thought I was going to fall asleep, but I didn't. Black Adam. That's all I'm saying.
Black Adam.
Just a picture of him in the movie theater. And he just says, Black Adam.
Actually, he would be such a good Hideo Kojima, like, mocap character to have in, like, one of his like fucking games. Like, have him in Death Stranding 2 or whatever. I would love that. That Rocky.
Oh, my gosh.
And then canceled Michael Keaton Batman film. Apparently it was Batman Beyond. People pretty bummed about that.
Yeah, that sucks.
But now this is the interesting part. And this is where I have some takes that I think, not even takes, they're just like, it's like reading the tea leaves. The Matt Reeves Gothamverse apparently is very safe. And Gunn is on board with that. And I think there's something that's very key for people to realize. James Gunn has always been pretty, not anti, but like not fully on board with the over interconnectivity of everything. Like, he's always been pretty vocal about like, I don't love having to jam it into Guardians. I don't like, he didn't love as Guardians of the Galaxy. So you could just like, there's things he's okay with it. And he obviously is going to connect DC stuff, but you can tell he's like very open to the other shit existing too. Like there's gonna, like, I could see him finding a way to do it where it's like, there is like the overall thread, but for the most part, he's the peacemakers can exist in its own. I think that's going to be a very big key part of it. Like, I don't think this is going to be just this one DCEU where everything is connected thread to thread. Because that wouldn't align with what his usual vision and comments are.
I think he has a lot of similarities to Feige as a studio head, where he is a massive fan of the source material and has a really good understanding of it. But I think different from him in that he was a director first. So I think he's going to have a lot of respect for directors' visions and like what they want to do, and be a lot more hands off on those directors and let them, you know, they don't want to put a fucking cameo in for Blue Beetle, then they don't have to. Like, you know, they can if they want to, but they don't have to. And there's going to be overarching plans, clearly, because he said that he wants to connect animated movies to the regular movies, to the TV shows, and even the video games. He said he wants to have some interconnectivity there. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be on board with doing the what Marvel has done, which is very connected. Very, very connected. I mean, there was a pilot episode for Ironheart in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. So I don't think that'll ever happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really know.
I have a lot of faith in James Gunn to just do something better, because I feel like even if you just look at Marvel, he's one of the best parts of Marvel. Like, right, he's the funniest part of Marvel. He has like the best, like, I feel like more grounded feels among most of the Marvel characters or Marvel directors. So like he is going to bring, and if even if you look at just the Guardians in comparison to most of the other Marvel movies, it's just so much different. So I'm excited for him. I'm excited to see what he does with DC, because I do think it's going to be offer something very different, like relatively speaking, to Marvel. And I'm super excited for that. Competition is great for us as moviegoers.
Yeah, no, we need it. We need it badly.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also this, like, the funny thing is like he may not be as into like the over interconnectivity, but he's like the biggest dweeb out of all the like he is a fucking nerd. Like he loves the weirdest characters, like when I say dumb as shit, I mean like in the most endearing, fun way. So like like Hendrick said, I have all the faith in him. Like I don't know if we're going to get the interconnectivity that people think we are. I mean, he's going to do it his way. And I think I trust his vision. I hope the really dumpy fan base that is going to get all pissy about all this shit isn't going to try and just steamroll it. Cause it's going to happen.
I think they've gone through their 7 stages or 12 stages of grief, whatever. how many stages of grief? They've gone through their stages of grief. I think they're at acceptance now with Zack Snyder's, the Snyderverse, or whatever you want to call it. I think they know it's over. They know it's done. I think they're ready to move on too.
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when Gahul doesn't get nominated for Movie Moment of the Year this year.
Fucking Guardians, baby.
Oh yeah, the Globes announced their nominations, but the Globes are stupid. So fuck the Globes.
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
I mean, who cares?
Shout out
Brendan Fraser. Are they on TV this year?
Well, you know when it's time for having the Oscar fever. It's being streamed somewhere, I think.
It's being streamed on the High Network.
Yeah, I'm streaming it with my urine.
This interview, this segment of Lights, Camera, Barstool interview with Stephen Lang, brought to you by BetterHelp. And this show in general is sponsored by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual, so when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck, maybe in a rut. Navigating any of life's changes can make you feel unsure, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or becoming a parent. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapying the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you and your brain. Whether or not you've been in therapy, you know and you've heard that therapy is definitely something that can help you out. And BetterHelp kind of cuts the tough things out of like the regular therapy that you can do in person. You can do chats. You can do online video calls. You can do, I guess, the easier way of getting to therapy and cutting out kind of the things that, like, me personally, I hate it, like getting on the subway, going to it. Needing to talk to somebody face to face can be, like I said, it can be a chat, can be a video call, can be a phone call. You don't got to see anybody. You don't got to physically talk to anybody. You can just type things out. BetterHelp is great for that sense. It kind of cuts out the things that scare people away from doing it, or like using the word excuse, but gives people excuses to not go. Because you can do it from the comfort of your own home in many different ways. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people, professionally licensed and vetted therapists, available 100% online, plus affordable. Fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new one at any time. Couldn't be any simpler than that. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/lights. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lights. Stephen Lang, he's back. He's Korich, the villain in Avatar, The Way of Water.
We're seeing it tonight.
Yeah, very excited. Very, very, very excited for Avatar, The Way of Water.
Avatar. I'm not 2. Seeing it. I'm a man of the people, and I didn't.
I have to record the screen. I'm not seeing it either. So that's I have to see it on
Losers. I'm going to see it before you guys. I'm going to spoil the whole thing. The water looks great. That's my first prediction. Water looks awesome. And the aliens fuck with their hair. I feel like that's the two big things we're going to get out of
this. The aliens do fuck with their hair.
It's like their car keys. It's like using your car key to fuck something. It's incredible.
They tail fuck. We had a good time with Stephen Lang. He gave some good insight into just Jimbo. We didn't call him Jim because we don't know. He gave him good sign, Jim Cameron, the mocap, the difference between him in this one and the last one in terms of like what he had to do. We had a good time. All right. We are very pleased and kind of surreal. We're talking about this movie after all these years. Stephen Lang, thanks for joining us. Avatar, The Way of Water. Usually we'd say the synopsis and explain what it is, but I think everyone knows what Avatar is. The release is imminent. How are we feeling after all these years? You're back. This movie's finally coming out. We got to be feeling pretty good.
Ah, I think you said surreal, didn't you? And I think that's a good word for it. It's been a long time coming. It's been on the horizon forever. And sometimes it seemed as if that horizon was actually receding. But, you know, we got there. We did the work. We got there. We had faith in the team, and here we are. So right now it's just pure excitement and kind of thrilling to be here.
Was there ever a point where you were like, I don't know if we're doing this ever. I'm not sure this is ever going to happen.
Nah, I've always been an optimist at heart, and I have, I've been in touch with Jim Cameron all the time over the years, so I never had any doubts it would get there. I thought I might be too old to do it myself at some point. You know, they might move beyond me, but I knew it would get done.
Was it and obviously we're not going to talk about your character. Don't want to know anything. Your character's obviously had something going on since the last movie, so we'll find that out ourselves. But was it hard kind of getting back into that role at all? Like, you've done sequels before, like recently you did Don't Breathe 2, but the gap between that much shorter. Uh-huh. Was there any challenge picking it back up?
Well, it's always a challenge, I think, but it was a pleasure too, because I wear this role like a glove for my, you know, personally. I'm not saying I'm successful in the role. I'm just saying I enjoy playing the role an awful lot. And so it was good getting back in harness to play the Colonel. And of course, I am playing the Colonel, but I'm playing him with a significant difference, because he did take two big arrows to the chest right at the end of the original. And so he's been altered, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah. Again, we're going to figure that. We're going to cross that road when we get there, how this all worked out, how you survived into this next one. A lot of talk has been made about the water in this movie, obviously in the title and everything, and the technology behind it. But what was your read on it, or your experience with it, as far as like what they had to do differently in this movie versus how they've done water in previous stuff?
Well, you know, as you, I'm sure, know, Jim is he's a man of the, he loves the water. He loves the oceans of our planet. And he knows a lot about the water, and so he's never been satisfied with the way water is done, has been done previously in film. And performance capture is integral to the world of Pandora. We can't have Pandora without performance capture. And so he needed to figure out a way to do underwater performance capture. And that was a real task. It took a while. And in part, I think that's one of the reasons for the delay. The long delay, but he figured it out how to do it successfully, and we did it. Now, for the performer, it's just flat out tough. I mean, you're working underwater. We trained in free diving, which is to say how to hold your breath for long periods of time. And not only hold your breath, you're not just holding it in a static situation. You have to act scenes. In my case, I had to fight. I had, you know, all kinds of stuff you have to do. It's just tough, but that's the job that we get hired to do, and we get trained to do it.
I saw somewhere in like an article, it was like, yeah, Kate Winslet learned how to hold her breath for like 30 minutes. And I honestly didn't, like, I don't believe that for a second. I'm like, and then like we go and we look up all freediving stuff, and we're like, oh my God, right. People can do this.
Right. Kate certainly was the first time she did a free dive. I think she held her breath for 7 minutes. So that's extraordinary. And so I have no doubt with the training, if Kate really set her mind to it, she probably could do 18 minutes or so, which I think is getting up there for the record, you know. But I don't know why one would want to do it, but it could be done, you know. I'm good for about 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay, we're about to ask what the next what your PR
was.
That's
pretty good still. Not bad. Not bad for an old guy, yeah.
That's pretty damn good.
We could Ken Jack and I could probably make it like one side of the pool to the other, like the short side, like from one edge to the edge side. I feel like you got us beat there.
But see, if you did the training, you really would learn, because the truth of the matter is we all have the capacity to do it. As the three of us sit here talking, we're probably using, each of us is using maybe 20% of our capacity, because that's all we need right here, you know?
I appreciate your faith in us. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get into it more. You mentioned Cameron. He's been obviously on the interview circuit as well. He said that the crew had to use a submarine klaxon to get his attention on certain things. Is that true? Were you sitting on set and a submarine klaxon was going off every now and then?
Possible. I don't recall the klaxon going off, but, you know, it's quite possible that that was the case. Jim gets pretty, you know, he can get pretty focused and pretty intense on what's going on. But, you know, I know how to get his attention if I need it. So there you go.
Yeah, you have the app on your phone, the submarine. You have the submarine klaxon app where it's like, all right, we're diving. Hit the klaxon.
No, well, sometimes you need a klaxon. Sometimes a guy needs a good blast with a klaxon, you know, get his buddy.
That's a great word.
Yeah.
Klaxon. Got to bring that back. You've done like a lot of theater and a lot of on location productions prior to Avatar. How does like the Cameron experience in general compare? Or at least I guess your Cameron experience compare?
It's singular and unique, and it kind of heads the list. Jim is a remarkable director, and the scope and scale of this project obviously dwarfs pretty much anything that I've been involved in. And I've been involved in a couple of big pictures over the years, but this was on a scale that is quite different. And of course, the technology is so advanced and so sophisticated on this show. So everything about working on Avatar is singular, I would say, you know, and it's a great, you know, as you go through a career, it's all about having new experiences and trying things you've never tried before. And so to be involved in this is great, because I do performance capture. We do the underwater work. We go flying. We do all kinds of stuff that we're not usually called upon to do. It's a great.
They don't do that in Streetcar Named Desire. That's
Streetcar got its own thing going there too, you know. You know that, but it's interesting you'd say that too, because what's really at the heart of this film is the emotional journey that these characters go on. You know, the theme, if one had to pick a theme for this film, it would have to be family. It's about the lengths that you will go to protect what you love and who you love. And so it's a deeply emotional thing. And, you know, I suppose in some way the themes of this are not that radically different than Streetcar Named Desire in its own way. A very fine play.
Yes. Yeah, whenever I look at Avatar on Disney Plus or anything, it says you might also like Brando.
That's very funny. Yeah. Well, could you imagine Brando? I mean, Brando, of course, was the original in Stanley Kowalski. I could see him in the world of Avatar, you know?
Oh, he'd have a blast. Oh, my God. Actually, Quaritch is not that dissimilar from from Kurtz in certain ways, I would say. So I guess that makes sense.
There are similarities to him and Kurtz. Yeah.
Since Avatar, since the first one, obviously that movie was on the forefront of the technology and it looked unbelievable. And honestly, I had a chance to go see an IMAX here in New York on a re-release and it still looks unbelievable, but that's been 13 years or even more technically based on when it was filmed. What was the biggest difference technology wise for you this time in terms of getting all this filmed?
Well, I would say that the biggest difference technology, look, the technology has advanced. It's gotten more sophisticated, I think, in ways that I probably am not the guy to define. I mean, it was different for me because in the original film, of course, I was a live action character. And in this one, I'm almost exclusively performance capture. So that's a major difference just in the way of working, I think. And then, of course, as I mentioned before, the major difference here is that we were doing underwater performance capture as well. In other ways, I think that probably there are some new lenses that Jim had to create to do this film. I think that there's some purely a lot of scenes in this are purely emotional scenes. There's an awful lot of there's very, very intimate work being done in this film. So it kind of becomes a family saga in a way. It's still a great action adventure film, but it's also got that it's a family saga in many, many ways. And I think that makes it a bit different than that first film.
Obviously, the tech is important, but it's the mind of James Cameron that moves this as much as it does, and why it's back after all these years, and why the first one was so successful, and why Titanic was so successful before that. What is it for you, having worked with him, having worked with many directors, like what is it that makes James Cameron tick that you think makes him so unique and so different, and has the ability to do this?
Right. I think for one thing, it would be his meticulous attention to every detail. I think that it has to do with his, you know, he's an interesting combination. I've always felt that Jim is sort of the Leonardo da Vinci of our time, because he kind of he's equal parts engineer, scientist, and visionary artist. And he can execute in all of those realms, and each of those realms really informs the other realms as well. So he really is kind of a complete Renaissance package when it comes to that, in my estimation. He's got a command of story. He understands what makes story work so well. And if I compare him to Shakespeare, and I don't do that casually, I would too. I mean, Leonardo, Shakespeare, that's some heavy company there. But the reason I would do that is because he creates high art for the people. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, there's a lot of art that's created that kind of is above me. You know, it can be too. There are novels that I know are going to win a Pulitzer or a Nobel Prize, and I can't read them. But Jim Cameron, the films that he makes, they really are for everybody. And so, but they're made at the absolute highest artistic level as well. And so what that does, it elevates the audience, you know, it pays such respect to the people he's making the movies for. And I think that is one of the things that makes Jim very unique.
You know, say whatever you want about Cameron, I think that he could easily direct Romeo and Juliet. Shakespeare could never direct Aliens. Not in a million years would he know what to do with that franchise.
Could Shakespeare write Aliens, you know? Could
his version of Aliens would be very interesting.
It'd be long.
Very long.
It would be. Yeah, that's interesting the way you put that too, because there's not many people like him anymore. And we've talked about this on our podcast a bunch. In terms of the names that can move the needle in Hollywood, it's almost few and far between at this point. It's, you know, it's the Tarantino, it's the Tom Cruise, but like he's one of the few that can make to the masses, and it still has like a quality and something different to it. It is quite fascinating. There's not much of that left. And he's got three and four. How much of three and four have you completed? Are you completed fully on the next few movies?
We're complete on three, which isn't to say that as things, you know, after Way of Water is up and running, we'll probably be doing a little contouring and work on it. There's always work to be done. Jim works up until, you know, that print needs to be delivered. You know, he was working yesterday, you know, on the movie, I think. So three we've filmed. We've actually done the first act of Avatar 4, and we haven't touched 5 at all. That's down the road. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but we've taken a bite out of the whole thing, for sure.
What gates are open? Yeah, seriously.
What a sick world we live in. We're talking to you about Avatar 2. It's been 13 years. We're like, all right, what about the next two, though? What about let's talk about the next two. Because we haven't had you on before, we got to talk about some of your other projects that we thoroughly enjoy. I'll start with Don't Breathe. I think Don't Breathe was fantastic. And it's one of those movies that was kind of on the beginning of the recent horror resurgence.
Yeah.
What do you think it was in your eyes in such an pivotal role in that movie, the main role? What was it that separated that movie? Because that was one of those where you go and you see, horror, 2010. And then you're like, oh, this is very different. This is actually horrifying.
Yeah, well, my buddies Fede Alvarez and Rodo Segues, who wrote that film, and Fede directed the Don't Breathe. They're very, very canny guy. They're terrific writers and smart, smart filmmakers. So there's that, and they came up with a great idea. It's a simple idea, and it's a wonderful idea, and we were able to, execute it, and it came out at a good time. It did, and it did great. So I was attracted to it because I thought the role was so out there, and I wanted to give it a shot. And I love that part. I really do. So that's why I like doing the sequel and, going on with it from here. Yeah.
What type of research did you have to put into playing a role like that where you can't see, where you're in the dark? Is that one of the more difficult ones you've had to do?
Sure. And particularly, in the climate that we live in these days, where casting has become very problematic in many, many areas, it seems to me. What I did was I went and trained and studied at a place at the Northeastern Association for the Blind, which is up in Albany, and I worked with some wonderful teachers there, and I basically would, go blind and do that. And I did that for several months on a weekly basis and worked daily. I just set myself to doing all kinds of tasks without my sight, whether it was cooking or doing yoga or whatever. And by the time it rolled around to do it, and then also I wore the lenses that I wore, knocked out about 60% of my vision in any case. And then we filmed a lot of it was in the dark, so I couldn't see very well anyhow. So that was the work. That was the preparation that I did.
That's awesome. Another one of yours we want to definitely talk about is Tombstone. Tombstone, I only got one question about Tombstone, and that's it. And it's that there is a sub debate within the movie world based off of some stuff that Kurt Russell had said. Kurt Russell said that he essentially directed the movie, more or less. Cosmatos was he said a ghost director. Other actors confirmed, other ones didn't say anything. What was your experience like as far as the actual direction of the movie?
Well, the movie would not have been made unless Kurt had interceded. And Kurt definitely did. Did he direct the movie? I consider Cosmatos the director of the film. And George did. George was the guy who moved the cameras around and was calling the shots. But I do think that Cosmatos was definitely, in conference with Kurt the whole time. And I know towards the end of the movie, after George was done and gone, we kept shooting, and Kurt was directing per se. But to be honest, we all were contributing at the time. And I think Kurt would say that too. Val had a big say in it. I had a say in it. Sam did, a lot of us did. I'm not saying we're directed by committee. That's not the case. Not at all. But I like George, and I like to give him his due and, rest his soul. I'd say I did another picture with George after that too. So it says directed by George Cosmatos on the picture. So I'm good with that. And I love Kurt Russell. I can't think of any actor I've ever worked with who really knows more about movies, about the movie business than Kurt does. So I give him that. And I'd be directed by Kurt anytime. But when That's it comes awesome. To Tombstone, that was directed by George Cosmatos.
Okay. We have about 5 minutes left, so we do a little rapid fire to end this here. Speaking of directors, here's our first question. Who is a director you're dying to work with, who you've never worked with?
I'd like to work with Wes Anderson.
Oh, I love that.
And I'd like to work with Scorsese while he's still working.
Mm-hmm. Love the Wes Anderson answer, though. You'd have a great whimsical role.
Yeah, I'd do good for him. If you're watching this, nice, Wes.
You'd be in like a tweed coat, like teaching like a bumblebee how to fly or something.
Indeed.
Yeah. What's a role that you auditioned for, really wanted, but didn't get?
Every actor
has a million of these, but like, what's the one that
hurts
stands
me
out?
So much? It was the role that the wonderful Gabriel Byrne played in
Miller's Crossing.
And I came real close to it. I tested for it, and I think they told me it was sort of a coin toss, but he was great in the movie. So.
Mm-hmm.
That role, it broke my heart when I didn't get that role.
We don't get a ton of honest answers on that one. We get a lot of like, oh, I have no regrets. I'm like, no, you right? got one. You all have
that one. No, that one broke. But there are not a whole lot of other ones, to be honest. You know, I mean, I've gotten a lot of the roles I wanted to get, but that one I really, really wanted. Yeah. Yeah.
What is a stage play you'd like to see made into a movie?
A stage play I'd like to see made into a movie. I think right now it probably might be The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy by Bertolt Brecht, because we're living in a very fraught time. If you happen to know that play, it's about the rise of a dictator. You know, essentially it's about the rise of Hitler, but set in, it's written in a whimsical style. I think it would make a great movie myself. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And now we have a play we have to research once we hang up on the Zoom call.
Yeah.
This is a very serious and hard question to answer, I'm sure. What does James Cameron smell like?
He's very fragrant, you know.
I wouldn't imagine that.
Oh, yes. He's got a fresh because, you know, Jim is a vegan. You know,
yes.
So there's no meat stink to him at all. You know, I mean, I imagine you guys both really, really stink of
reek.
Yes, right?
Absolutely.
We're virtual, and I can smell you from here, guys. Come on, you know, and you know I do. You know I reek. You know,
is it like an ocean breeze smell he has? Like those, you know, those like
that's a good way to do it. It's a refreshing. It's a refreshing and piney sort of a smell. You know, it's alluring and yet whimsical.
Love that.
Two more holiday related. What's your favorite holiday meal?
I like a Yule log.
Oh,
wow. Nice.
I'm looking forward to the Yule log.
I can tell you're excited. It's been on your mind before this question.
I mean, I'm good with if they're going to do a roast turkey or roast or a ham. I'm good with that. But I'm looking forward to the Yule log because I don't eat the desserts all that often, you know, but. Yeah,
those seem like impossible to make, rolling up the Swiss roll. Every time I watch Great British Baking Show or whatever, like it seems like a disaster to make. But damn, are they good? Last question.
It's not a Swiss roll, though. You know that.
Yeah, it's like, so isn't it similar in execution?
Well, it's those little wafers. It's chocolate wafers that are bound together with whipped cream, and that's it.
Oh, I was thinking of
don't
the,
do anything the, else to it. No, Swiss roll is a Swiss roll. I got nothing against Swiss roll, but it's not a Yule log.
So you're not letting us make you a Yule log, it sounds like. We're not going to be your bakers.
Because I made the British version, I guess.
No, you're not. No, no, you're not. I don't want your. No, I'll do it myself.
Last one. What's your favorite holiday movie?
My favorite holiday movie?
And it doesn't need to be holiday themed. It could just be a movie that you like to watch around the holidays.
Well, my favorite holiday movie, I know there's such a simple answer. I think it would probably be I love The Wizard of Oz, even though it's not. Yeah, I really do. But and I say holiday movie because back in the day when I was a kid, they always showed The Wizard of Oz right after Thanksgiving, you know. So it almost was. Oh, I'll tell you my favorite holiday movie. Yeah, I love The Wizard of Oz. But there's a movie that I love with Laurel and Hardy called The March of the Wooden Soldiers. Mm-hmm. And that movie, I watched that the first time when I was probably 5 years old, and I've probably seen it 20 times since then. And it's Laurel and Hardy, if you like them, at their best, you know, and I like that. Yeah.
Love that.
We have
how mature I am, right?
I have to check it out now. I think we're right with you.
Oh, it's a wonderful movie. And then it's A Wonderful Life, which I know a bunch of actors are going to say. And it's a terrific movie, no question about it. Yeah, it's a real wonderful movie. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones, aren't there, when you think about
really
it?
Are.
Oh, yeah.
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 We have a coworker who watches The Patriot on Christmas. So there's some unique answers there. But thank you so much.
That's some weird stuff.
I think that's good for July 4th. I'd watch
July
the 4th
movies. Yeah.
Sure. It's not often you can go to a theater and see something with this production value, with this hype, with this energy. We are beyond excited not to see the movie, but see you in the movie. Thank you so much for taking the time out for us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, fellas. I hope you dig the movie, all right? And have a great holiday.
Very excited, yes.
Talk to you down the road, I hope.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
You too, my friends. Bye-bye.
Thank you to Stephen Lang.
Remember he told us we smell like beef or something like that? He's like, you guys look like you smell like beef.
Misses him smell like shit.
And it was incredible.
Yeah.
It's like he was in person. And then I brought that up when we did a Kumail last week. I was just like, yeah, we just did Stephen Lang. He told us that we look like we smell like beef. And he's like, I mean, you do.
I'm sorry, guys.
Ken Jack's interview with Kumail on Thursday. I was really bummed to miss that, but I physically couldn't speak last week.
I mean, you were in the picture, in the final picture with Kumail.
I ran into the office to take a picture with him.
Little chode.
Yeah. This episode brought to you by Roman. Roman can help you with many things. But let's talk about sex life today. Of the 50% of men have symptoms that get in the way of wanting to enjoy their sex life, but Roman, here to help. It's a digital health clinic for men. Again, anything from hair loss, hygiene stuff, to sex life. Roman addresses a variety of sexual health needs for men. They offer genuine medication that helps achieve and maintain strong erection. We talk about their discreet swipes, and they get delivered in that discreet packaging, too. So even if for some reason you're embarrassed, you don't have to be.
Very helpful.
Then that's just proof you're fucking. If you have the wipes, Roman offers a testosterone test, includes lab processing. If it's appropriate for you, treatment for low testosterone. And men with low T, getting testosterone levels back to normal can help increase your libido. Also, Roman, no waiting rooms, no hassle, none of that. Straightforward digital experience from the comfort of your home. Medication testing is appropriate. Roman will send it directly right to your door. Everything arrives in discreet packaging, like we said. Free 2-day shipping, and again, mention many other things as well. ro.co/lights get 20% off your first order, but many other things as well. Mentioned hair loss treatment. Everybody who uses it says it works fucking great. Says Roman's fantastic in that sense. So ro.co/lights, 20% off your entire first order today. The Fablemans, the latest movie from Steven Spielberg, maybe the most important to him personally in his life. It is a movie that is loosely, but also very much based on his life. It's a factually, I don't know. What do you call it? What's like the best way to call it?
Fictional biopic, I guess.
Yeah. It's like a fictional biopic.
I guess that's kind of like an oxymoron, but like it's kind of what it is, I guess. A fictionalized biopic.
Yeah. Young Sammy Fableman falls in love with the movies after his parents take him to see The Greatest Show on Earth. Under the camera, Sammy starts to make his own films at home, much to the delight of his supportive mother. His mother does like that he makes films. He's a big fan.
Sammy.
Gabriel LaBelle, kind of a new on-the-scene actor, playing Sammy Fableman, who is the character based on Steven Spielberg. Michelle Williams, Paul Dano, Seth Rogen, Judd Hirsch in a... critically acclaimed role. People, I think Judd Hirsch is the role that sticks out the most for people, at least in terms of critical
stuff, like, for sure.
Award season stuff. Also a killer cameo in this movie. There's one really great cameo in this movie. I don't want to say.
Yeah.
Very, very. We'll talk about the spoiler.
Beast mode.
This movie,
we don't know who it is. It could be anybody. We're not entirely sure.
Listen here, Sammy Fableman.
I'm going to direct Dune.
This is the odds-on favorite to win Best Picture. Though, It's hard to tell right now. I don't think it's as clear cut as people think. I will note, it seems as though Everything Everywhere might pick up some steam late. Banshees of Inisherin might pick up some steam, which is very fucking cool. And I would not rule out Top Gun Maverick. I think Top Gun Maverick is going to make a Top Gun Maverick is bottling up their very, very, very strong award season push. I don't think it's going to win, but I would not be surprised if the steam really picks up heavy for it. Whether that's artificial or not to get people to watch the Oscars, that could be the case. But Top Gun Maverick is going to get a Best Picture nomination, and I think it's going to get pushed pretty fucking hard. But The Fabelmans is very much the odds-on favorite to win right now, which makes sense. It's a movie about movies. It's from Steven Spielberg. And not just is it a movie about movies, I think it's a fucking great movie. It's one of the best movies of 2022. For me, it's number three behind Decision to Leave and Everything Ever All at Once. It's a 95 out of 100 for me. I connected on this movie at a great level. Like, I think it's just, like, wondrous. Like, I think there's just a love and there's a heart with this movie. They're very well acted. Looks fucking fantastic. But it's just one of those things that it seems like a cop-out to say it, but it just isn't. It's a Steven Spielberg movie. Like, that's just what it is. It's a great Steven Spielberg movie. There just is a feel to it. There's like an aura around it. You're like, this is a big time, awesome movie. And it's cool to have that feel with such a personal story. Like, it has the big blockbuster Spielberg feel. Like, West Side Story was a big sweeping musical epic. And, you know, Jurassic Park, Jaws, like, they have, this has that big feel. And I'm not saying it's making the money like that. I hope people go out and see it because it's a smaller story. But, like, it combines both of those things, and it's why Spielberg, which, again, is great to say because it's a movie about him making movies. I love The Fabelmans. I thought this was awesome. This was an awesome movie.
Could any other director get away with making a movie like this?
Probably not.
Steven Spielberg?
Nope.
I mean, no one has a problem with it. No one, because he's just
like, maybe Scorsese. Like, that's the only other person I could even think of that could try.
Yeah, probably Scorsese.
Yeah, but even then, like, he is like the grandfather of Hollywood at this point, and it's just, I mean, like Jeff said, it just like has a magical feel to it, like every other Spielberg movie. It's just, I loved it. I'll let Ken Jack talk a little bit more, and then I'll come back through.
Actually, you go first because I feel like I'll have a differing opinion.
All right, so this is my number two on the year, behind Banshees, for very different reasons. At points, this is like, it's very therapeutic. You can tell for him. You can tell he wrote this during COVID. You can tell he was locked in his house and he wanted to tell this story. And he said, now's the time. I think there are amazing performances all over this movie. Paul Dano being my favorite performance consistently throughout the movie. Judd Hirsch obviously comes in, not a lot of screen time, but the screen time he does have, it's show-stopping. And I think, what is his name? LaBelle?
Gabriel LaBelle, no?
Gabriel LaBelle. Gabriel LaBelle, I haven't seen him in anything else, but he looks like Chris, by the way. I thought he was great. There's a very clear tone shift when he comes onto the screen, switches over from the younger actor to him, which I really enjoyed because it almost becomes like a little coming of age movie at that point versus just a pure on family drama. How did you guys feel about Michelle Williams is what I want to know. Cause she was
the same way I always feel about Michelle Williams.
Yeah.
A little overacty.
I
think that's a good way of putting it, to be honest.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Maybe a little bit. I, she's just not my favorite actor. I think she's a good actress. Just not my favorite actress.
Yeah. There was a lot of hype for her coming into this and I just, it didn't really connect for me. It got better as the movie went on, but when it first starts, you're like, wow, she's really going for that accent, which is like the Jewish mother on the East Coast like accent. And it was maybe a little overdone. So all these performances were fantastic. And then just the through line of Steven Spielberg's just life story. It's just amazing. Like there's a couple moments in there that they make you tear up. And I'm not sure that was the intention. I mean, sure it was, but it's not sad or overly happy, but like when he looks up at the screen, it's like that's how you feel watching movies. Like when you fall in love with movies the way we have, you have that those moments where you're watching a movie and you're just like, wow, it's incredible. And you see that on the young Spielberg or the young Sammy Fabelman's face. and those moments hit. It's incredible. Also, I want to give a big shout out to him because he could have written his parents, and it probably took a lot of restraint, and this is just him being a real vet. There's a script out there where the parents are written much differently as villains of the story. Rather, they're just written as flawed characters and real human beings, and I really appreciated that. Like he didn't put down his father or put down his mother. He just showed their faults, but he showed why he loves them and how they've affected his life too. So I really enjoyed that.
I'm definitely lower on this than you guys. I think that there. So I'll just say the highlights, I guess, for me first. Gabriel LaBelle was awesome. I thought, like, especially more so towards the end of the movie, like the third act, I think is when he really like becomes a character, I guess. And on the other side, like, most of the technical aspects of this movie were great, like camera work and just like the big movie feel that like Spielberg brings is like undeniable. Like, he does that in every movie, good or bad, doesn't matter. He makes you know that like you are in a legitimate, like in Harry's words of Harry Styles, like a movie versus like almost anything else. For me, I don't think this is in my top five of the year, not my top 10, top 15, maybe top 20. Like, wow. It feels to me, the entire time I was watching this movie, like, this is a movie built for one reason only, and it's to win Oscars. It felt to me like it was something so gratuitous and so self-indulgent and like so, like, I don't know how to explain it, long-winded, like, not heartless is the wrong word, but it felt like a movie where he's like, is there a way I can use my personal story to win an award? And like, it didn't resonate with me really at all. It felt like there's a really great bit in American Dad, actually, which is a weird thing to use to compare this to, but where like an evil villain, he makes a movie where it's a kid in the Holocaust who's Jewish and also mentally challenged and an alcoholic, and his dog dies. And the movie's called, his name, the character's name is Oscar Gold. And like, the movie's built to win Oscars. That's what this felt like to me. I felt like watching this movie, I'm like, this entire movie is built for this one sole purpose, and it's to win awards. And I don't think it should win anything outside of the technical. I don't think anything outside of, like, you know, camera score, some editing aspects for sure. But like, I think Michelle Williams overacted the shit out of this role. Paul Dano, I think, was just kind of there, and which is like
too,
kind of
too schmaltzy for you.
She was just like,
just the movie in general.
It was just like it didn't feel like there was a heart or purpose to this. You know what I mean? It felt like the movie was built for the sole purpose of going to all these award shows and cleaning up. And that, to me, it just doesn't resonate. It feels gross. And that, I think, and just going into the other end of it, like, I think Paul Dano was underutilized a lot. I think Michelle Williams is overutilized a shit ton. Like, she's just doing this weird thing where she does like this almost like, it's almost like she's play acting in a movie. Like, she's like all this like ethereal, like super projecting, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't dig that at all. I think she took away and took me out of the movie a lot. But again, just on the positive side, it's like Gabriel LaBelle was so fucking good. Judd Hirsch, I think he stole that scene he was in. I think that's the scene of the movie for me. The camera work was incredible. And some of those lines are really great. I don't think a lot of the other dialogue really did much for me. Most of the scenes in high school were fucking ridiculous. Like, that psycho Christian girl. But that's the thing. That role is awesome in a different movie, not in this one. It did not line up with everything else that was going on. And just, I don't know, man. Nothing about this movie really resonated with me. And it disappoints me because, like, I wanted to love this movie a lot, and I just don't. I don't feel like this movie was written with good intentions. I feel like it was written to be like, hey, I'm Steven Spielberg and here's my story. And that's, I don't like that. And I would rather, as much as I loved West Side Story, because it was like his ability and like his presence. And like, you can tell when you're watching a Spielberg movie versus almost any other movie in the world. And like, I loved that, like imparting his influence on there. I didn't like it in this case at all. So like, I don't know where I rate it. It'd probably be like mid 80s, low 80s, something like that. And it might seem too high because like, it looks like I'm like shitting on a lot, but like, I'm just saying like, that's what takes it away from being.
Like, I have a very fair score. Yeah.
No, yeah, I like my mid low.
I don't think you have a very like unique, crazy take. I think there's people who agree with you on that too. I think it's like, it's not like you're going that far against the grain.
It's like, incredible. I think a lot self-indulgent. It's incredible.
It is. It is. I guess it's a matter of not that you didn't connect. I guess you didn't connect with that. That's kind of the whole fucking point. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I didn't feel that sentiment. I think it is there to, it's there to win awards. Like, I don't think that's like a, but I think that's kind of any Spielberg thing. So I guess I don't view it that way. I don't know.
I was winning anything.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe in his eyes, he was like, this fucking rules.
Or like, what was that? Rin Tin Tin or whatever. Like,
I will say this is about the hardest he's ever pushed for awards. Like, this is,
yeah, it's a massive push. Yeah.
He's never submitted one of his films into a film festival until this movie. He submitted it at TIFF, which it won the audience award.
What's kind of funny is, if you said it wasn't about him, I think I might have that same sentiment. Because it's him, though, I feel like it is, like, that personal feel to it's there for me. And it feels like it's there because it's something that he wants to say and it's throwing himself. But, like, it is odd if I'm, like, playing devil's advocate for my own score and my own viewpoint of the movie, because I do love it. Like, if it was just, like, if Spielberg was just talking about some other guy, just somebody's like, it's not about me, then I'd almost feel like I'd have Ken Jeong's same feel.
See, this is the weird thing, too, is because I feel like all three of us probably have mostly the same opinion. We're like, anytime you watch a movie that's about movies, we're like, we'll enjoy it, but we also have like that little bit of like a guard wall on it where we're like, we know this is being made for the sole purpose, right, of like winning shit. But then like the combination, I think, of that plus it being the story about himself, I think that really didn't – like it really like put up a really big like sort of barrier for me for as far as the enjoyment goes.
It's like that, I think like the more I think about it, that's why it worked for me, because it is about him. Where I feel it was just about some random dude, I'd probably be more closer to your camp.
Ken Jeong's being manipulative. He doesn't like it. The movie is very manipulative. I will say that, but I don't care.
It's
loving Fablemans.
So some of my best relationships in life have been very manipulative on my end. I've been very happy. I'm a little dog.
It's not like I'm like saying this is a bad movie. It's not like, it's just empirically like, or objectively, it's not a bad movie. It's just, there's nothing about this movie where I'm like, damn, fucking can't wait to watch Fablemans again. Or like, damn, this is like one of the best, like this is a titan of this year in cinema. Like, it's just not there for me at all. Like, it's just nothing about this movie screams best of the year for me in almost any regard. It's more like, this is a movie I can appreciate to a degree for Spielberg because of like, there is a level of like personal, like a personality to it where like you see so many of his movies in the past, it's just like blockbuster, blockbuster, blockbuster. And this is really like the closest I think he's gotten to like, it's not even really an indie movie, but it's the closest he's gotten to something like that. And I appreciate the try. It's just the feel of it is so like, it just doesn't vibe right with me at all.
Were you bothered by the 3-point line on the volleyball courts when he was in high school?
Yes, of course. It is very frustrating.
I know.
That fucking really high school kid hammed it up so big, Logan or whatever. What are you talking to my girl for, Sammy Fableman? It's like, who talked like that ever? Like, no. It's just, I don't know. That's that. And by the way, every woman in Spielberg's life is a raging psychopath. There is not a normal woman in Steven Spielberg's life, according to him.
That's another question I wanted to ask about Michelle Williams' performance. Was it her overacting that gave it the appearance, or was it written in a way that we're supposed to take that away from it, where she had maybe was undiagnosed BPD? Was that just her performance that gave that vibe, or was that an intentional thing, do you think?
Because she does that, I feel like, a lot in movies, which is why I think it's her. That's why I think it was a her thing versus a written thing.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about Seth Rogen in this movie? I thought he was a low point.
Wasn't there.
How you feel about Paul Dano? Him being, that's how I feel about Seth Rogen. I thought Paul Dano was incredible.
He had like one good scene, Paul Dano, I thought, that were like they gave him room to run. But yeah, Seth Rogen did not get that opportunity.
No. God, imagine if your uncle just started fucking your mom.
Yeah. Very cool.
We're pretty different on this one. I mean, I get it though. Like, I don't, I totally get your, your points of dislike for it.
Yeah.
It's, again, you gotta take a grain of salt anything a movie but a movie for me, because that is like my that's my weak spot.
Do you think the Academy will react well to this come time to vote? Yes.
I think the Academy's gonna fucking love this shit.
I will note that the one of the things I think I loved most about that movie was that David Lynch cameo and just the ending. The ending 10 minutes of this movie I thought were really well done. I really liked it.
Yeah, they did wrap it right. Yes, this movie wraps very well. You didn't like it?
No, I said that was like a perfect bow tie. I mean, that was amazing.
We talked about this with, again, Kirk Minnett and I talked about this. We talked about Spielberg endings typically. Spielberg, like, how did he say? He's like, Spielberg sometimes can't fucking help himself. Like The Post is a great example. Like, it's so on the nose, like, Watergate, hey! It's like, Jesus Christ, man. He's like, even Saving Private Ryan, he goes, Spielberg can't, but like, I think this is like a very well done, you're right, great bow on the end of it for Spielberg here. Like, it is true. Like, Spielberg really sometimes, like, no matter how fucking great of the movie is, like, you just can't not do something. You're like, Jesus Christ, man. So, but I do think this ended really well.
Perfect. And very well acted from David Lynch as well. Just that line was great. Just like, where's the horizon? And then just, get the fuck out of my office. That was just a great ending. And then the walk off into the lot. Great ending.
Next, what are we doing next week? Oh, Avatar. That's an easy one. That one's wide. That movie release is wide.
Whale, I do not think is – the Whale, I'm sure people are going to want us to review it, but it's not playing anywhere.
Yeah, we all saw The Whale. But I mean, there's no point of talking about it yet.
It's hardly playing in New York.
It's playing more in more theaters in New York than I thought it would, though. I will say I was pretty surprised by that. But no, it is. It's not wide at all. It's very not wide.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be this, and then will it be? It's this, and then is it Knives Out?
Knives Out will be released on Christmas. So
So we'll review this, and then we'll review Knives Out, because our episode after Way of Water would be on Christmas, the day after Christmas. So, yeah. Yep.
When are we going to do Babylon?
I am excited for Babylon. That could be a shit show. It sounds like a shit show. It sounds like you either love Babylon or it's like your least favorite movie of the year.
Dude, let's talk about the reviews for Avatar Way of the Water. Dude, when that embargo got lifted, some of those tweets were insane. One of them was crazy.
The score embargo is not out yet. I think that's like today or that's tonight.
Yeah, the reactions.
Yeah. Yeah. This episode, we're going to try to bring Ken Jack back. I think he froze, but I'll do our ad read here. Episode presented by Rocket Money. Good time of the year to save money. You know how much your subscriptions might be costing you? Maybe you have Netflix. Maybe you got HBO Max. You got Disney Plus. You got all those. Adds up. Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when they're really spending closer to $200. The Rocket Money app shows all your subscriptions in one place, cancels what you don't want, and it does it for you. That's the big thing. Rocket Money can find shit you need when you're paying for. To cancel a subscription, all you got to do is press cancel. That's it. Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Cancel unnecessary subscriptions with Rocket Money today. Save money. Maybe you're paying for two. I was paying for two Hulu subscriptions at one time. Maybe you're not realizing you're paying for something. Rocket Money will help you cancel things, and it does it for you. Takes all the hard stuff out of the way for that. Rocket Money, great way to save money. Great way to clean things up in your finances. So right now, go to rocketmoney.com/lights. Can save you hundreds per year. That's rocketmoney.com/lights. Lights.
All right. Are you back?
Yeah, it was the Wi-Fi, sorry.
Okay. Last thing we're going to do today, underappreciated movies of 2022. We'll start doing our top list soon. There's some things we still got to see. There's a couple things I still need to see for sure. But movies that maybe have not got as much love as you would hope. This is an easy list for me, actually.
Very.
This came together real quick. I'll start off with number five. Speaking of White Lotus, Emily the Criminal. We interviewed the main stars of this movie. We also interviewed Aubrey Plaza. Emily the Criminal, very – somebody compared it a little bit in terms of like anxiety to like a Safdie Brothers type movie. Like it's a very anxiety-inducing movie. Fast-paced, kind of just kind of jolts you around. Oh, Judd Hirsch was in Uncut Gems.
Huh.
A character named Gooey, I believe.
Gooey.
Right?
I do not remember.
Judd Hirsch was his dad, I think. Was he? Yeah, Emily the Criminal. Awesome kind of crime thriller. I won't say much about it. Don't want to spoil it. Robbie Fox recently watched. He said, did you see Emily the Criminal? I said, yeah, I saw it a while ago. Definitely one of those 2022 movies that you should – I high recommend on it. Not one of the best, not like one of the top 10, but a very well-done movie, very well-acted, kind of jolts you around as a viewer. It's one of those experience-type movies in terms of like a thriller. So Emily the Criminal, number five for me. Ken Jack.
I think my number five will be Confess Fletch with John Hamm. I feel like that movie flew under the radar a ton. Very funny, very like – I was never like a huge fan of like the old Chevy Chase like Fletch movies or anything like that, but like I really enjoyed this one, and I don't think a ton of people watched it, so I would say check it out.
I still haven't seen it. Is that streaming anywhere?
I don't know, actually. I'm not sure.
Let's find out.
But you're up.
My number five, as I look up to see if Confess Fletch is able to be watched anywhere, my number five, it's on Fubo TV, whatever the fuck that is. Everything's always on Fubo for some reason.
Usually soccer. It's like soccer in a couple movies.
Yeah.
But my number five is The Wonder. Netflix release starring Florence Pugh. Definitely not a movie for everyone. Very slow paced and has one of the weirdest framing devices to begin and end the movie I've ever seen. Probably my least favorite part of the movie. But outside that, everything in between I think is great. I think Florence Pugh is a – that's her best – as good as she was in Don't Worry, Darling, I think she's even better here. Incredible performance, incredible score, a score that I think should be up for nominations, if not a favorite. I mean, beautiful score, great cinematography, sweeping landscape. If you like that Irish countryside, if you saw Banshees and like that, you get a lot of the same here. Really great movie, in my opinion. It's like a religious mystery, very tense at points. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But like I said, could definitely see why someone would fucking hate that movie because it does trudge along. It's slow. Check it out on Netflix, like I said.
Another movie for me, number four, is Vengeance. Sorry. Vengeance. This year's – that's a Blumhouse movie. Produced by Blumhouse. Written by – B.J. Novak, also directed by B.J. Novak, who is obviously known mostly for the movie The Founder with Michael Keaton, also The Office. Texas movie, love it. It's a douchey journalist and podcaster who goes to Texas from New York. Some fun Texas scenes. I like Vengeance. It's a dark comedy. I thought it was really well done. There's some spots where it's a little, I don't know, pretentious maybe.
It bites off more than it can chew at points.
Yeah, for sure. And it may be a movie that I don't know if everyone – like I think most people listening would like enjoy Emily the Criminal. Like it's a perfect like you're going to sit down, thriller. Vengeance, I could see some people be like, eh, I didn't like Vengeance. But I really enjoyed Vengeance. I thought B.J. Novak did a pretty good job with the script too. I thought it was clever, had some good writing, enjoyable movie.
I saw it before you, and I knew you were going to love it.
Yeah, you did. You said you were going to like this movie a lot, and I did. I ended up liking it.
Whataburger being a central plot point, just right up your alley.
They have a great answer. They're like what's good there? They go, there's everything. Whataburger. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what I, yeah.
Also, the best acting, easily the best acting Ashton Kutcher's ever done, right? Like, that's the best he's ever been.
That's not a high bar, but
he was fucking incredible in that movie, I thought.
The answer on that can only be like, sure.
Had to give my guy a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken Jack.
Oh, I'm no.
Losing again. The internet in the office is such a fucking joke. That's why I don't go in the office anymore.
I'm in the office.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It doesn't matter where you are in the office. It could be anywhere.
Okay.
We have new podcast studios, but I didn't think they were going to be done this morning, so we did them remotely. But all right, you go. You do your number four.
Well, my number four is Emily the Criminal, so works out well. On Netflix, by the way, just hit Netflix last week. I didn't see it in theaters, so I just saw it last week, but I enjoyed it a ton. Like you said, has a huge Safdie Brothers feel to it. Like almost you could tell either they were influenced by it or at least a lot of the same stuff. I thought Aubrey Plaza was great. I'd love to see her more high octane thriller stuff like that. Theo Rossi, fantastic in it as well. Someone we interviewed for the movie showed me a side of him that I actually didn't know he had in him. Like he was great. Yeah, it's like a millennial revenge thriller. I think that's an easy rec, especially to people our age, because what she deals with is what a lot of people deal with our age, which is college debt and a shitty job market. And the length she goes to get out of that, not something I would do, but I'll tell you what, I was like, you know, maybe if I had a few more grand of college tuition debt, maybe.
Yeah. Emily the Criminal is a high recommend. In terms of underappreciated too, I think that's probably one of like the easier ones to say and like really fits the bill, because a lot of the ones we are talking about, like, Vengeance got a smaller release, but like Emily the Criminal really flew under the radar. Ken Jack.
For my number four, I would do Prey. I know it's not like some sort of micro release or something like that, but like Prey, I think people didn't watch it because like all the Predator sequels have sucked ass.
What happened to your mic?
He's on his phone now.
Oh, okay.
He has to be, because our internet is fucking dog shit in our office.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely disgusting. Thanks, All Business Pete. Why, is it bad or good?
No, it's hey, we got to get your opinion, so it is what it is.
My next one is, I'm going to just put it as close as possible. My next one is Prey, because Prey, I think not enough people saw, because Predator sequels suck, so going to go with Prey. Really good movie.
Jack looks like my mom when she tries to FaceTime me.
So I mean, it's crazy. It's not his fault, though. It's crazy. We just don't have the internet. We're an internet company, and the internet doesn't work. Number three for me is The Outfit. The Outfit is a stage play in the form of a movie. Graham Moore, who wrote The Theory of Everything? No. Imitation Game. Those are like the same year. That's why I mixed them up. Imitation Game. He wrote that. He wrote this movie and directed it. Zoe Deutsch, Mark Rylance, Dylan O'Brien, Simon Russell Beale, who was in Death of Stalin. Very good movie. We interviewed, I think, Dylan O'Brien for this movie. We ended up talking to Zoe Deutsch, but not about this movie. Very good. Like one of those really cool, like it translates well as a stage play to a movie. Very quaint, small setting. Cool kind of not like a whodunit, but like crime thriller. The Outfit was a really cool movie. One of the cooler movies released this year in terms of like what it was, how it was made, how it was written. So I'd say The Outfit. Ken Jack, number three.
Fresh on Hulu. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's a horror movie that more people should see. Really, really cool cannibal shit. Sebastian Stan, Edgar Jones. Awesome ending and really just fucking creepy. I think a lot of people would like it if they gave it a shot. So I'm going to go with Fresh.
Promise I'm not stealing Jeff's pick, but my number three is Vengeance. I love pretty much everything about that movie. I've said it before. I love movies that swing for the fences. That movie fucking swings for it's pulling out a lot of threads. And BJ Novak is a very talented writer. I don't think he's a very talented actor. I think this would have been probably a top five movie of the year for me if he had gotten someone else in there. I think he's very distracting at points as the lead. But outside of that, it's funny. I mean, it's good like office style humor where it's so awkward and you feel so uncomfortable at points, but you're also just, it's so goddamn funny. Very charming. Not much else to say. I think it's streaming on Paramount Plus right now. So if you have that or want to boot up a 1 week free trial, it's worth it. I'm unlike Jeff. I think most people would enjoy this movie. at least for the humor. If not for the humor, for the John Mayer cameo.
Right. And your guy Kutch. My next one, by the way, I probably should have mentioned Triangle of Sadness. I just want to throw that out there. It's not on my list. I probably should put that in there. Probably maybe it's on Gooch's list. Cha-Cha Real Smooth for me. I liked it even more the second time I saw it. I know. It's in your list as well. Cooper Rafe, he also did Shithouse in 2020. I just ducked both your picks.
What the fuck?
He also did Shithouse in 2020. I love Shithouse quite a bit. He's back as writer, producer, director for Cha-Cha Real Smooth. I won't say more because I'll let Gooch say stuff. But 87 out of 100, I like that one quite a bit. Especially on the second watch. I didn't like it much the first time. I think I watched in a different setting second time, and I really enjoyed it. Ken Jack, number two.
I'm a little criminal, and just for the reasons you guys said. You guys detailed it pretty well.
There we go. My number two is Cha-Cha Real Smooth also.
I know you like Dakota Johnson in it quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I think she should get a nomination. I thought she was fucking incredible. Like, mesmerizing how good she was. Cooper Rafe is just – it's almost unfair for someone to be that young and that talented to be able to write, direct, and I think he's a pretty damn good actor too. And dealing on subject matters, Shithouse and Cha-Cha Real Smooth kind of following in the same line of he's writing about his own life as a young person, which I do not think is easy. Because when you're young, everything feels – it's a little disoriented. A little disorienting, but he feels like he's so in control of it. I like this even more than Shithouse. I thought it was a lot more refined. Fucking incredible movie. On Apple TV Plus right now if you want to watch it.
Yeah, I would definitely check it out.
I just got a banner at Puss in Boots appears on Hot Ones. It just made me fucking laugh.
Really? Holy shit, really? How does that work? Wow.
I have no idea.
My number one is I'm cheating. It's X and Pearl. I think it's gotten pub and it's gotten press, but honestly, not enough. I think Mia Goth fucking amazing, especially in Pearl. That monologue alone was award worthy. We talked to Ty West about the movies. I think X and Pearl are two like cornerstone examples of like what we should be doing with horror in movies. And horror is in a great spot right now, but X and Pearl were fucking awesome. And to release two in one year is just that rips. That's so cool. That's such a cool just filmmaking achievement for Ty West. So yeah, X and Pearl. Those are my two most underappreciated of the year.
My number one, I guess, is it's The Outfit. Again, for the reasons I think I'm not sure if you picked a Gooch, but for the reasons at least you outlined, Jeff, awesome movie, like very much like a stage play, and just really good performances all around. And that's something we'll talk about it, I'm sure, when we talk about The Whale. I appreciate if those movies felt very similar to watch in a lot of aspects. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. My number one, Jeff mentioned it in passing earlier, Triangle of Sadness. It's one of my top five movies. It's my number five on the year as of now. Still a couple more to see. But number five on the year for me, I thought it was fucking awesome. very fun movie. I think – we are teetering on the edge of maybe we have too many Eat the Rich movies, a little too many class conscious movies at this point. But I thought it was really well done, and that's kind of Roy Austin's jam between Square and Force de Majeure. Which Force de Majeure, watch that fucking movie. Don't watch Downhill.
Not our version. It sucked ass.
But I thought that movie was great. Also, rest in peace to Charlby Summers, who was the lead actress in that movie. Died unexpectedly this summer, right after the Palme d'Or win over in Italy, which really sad, but fucking amazing performances across the board. Really, really good movie. I think it hit streaming in a couple days, too, at least in the next couple weeks. I don't hear Jeff at all. Do you? Jeff, you're muted.
I was muted. Definitely check it out. I mentioned it probably should have been on my list. It's an 87 as well. A couple of these are actually almost all these are 87. The highest I had on this list was X 88. But yeah, a lot of good movies. I'll say it. I think access is very tough, but at this point, a lot of these movies are hitting streaming. I hate the notion that they don't make good. People say like, there's not that many good movies. There's a lot of good movies. There are a ton there are a ton of good movies that came out this year. So at this point, throughout the year, it's hard to go see them. I get that. At this point, they're mostly out on streaming now. So now, if you're a movie person and you say there's no good movies this year, that's on you for not making the effort to go see them, because they are out now. You can rent them. You can buy them. Take a look, because there are a shitload of good movies that came out in 2022.
Different kinds of movies, too. Like, there's good thrillers. There's good dramas. There's good dark comedies. Like, horror. Great year for horror. And there's something for everyone. This year. I thought there was something for everyone. You'll find something you like. Don't say there's no good movies anymore. It's just a stupid thing to say.
It is. I agree completely. That's it. Avatar The Way of Water next week. But on Friday, we are starting our second podcast a week again. Ken Jack Gooch, probably a special guest, and our interview with Kumail Nanjiani. So we will talk to you then.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.